Hey Kyle, this is Justin in Ventura, California, and I'm coming to you after just getting out of the water for some slow summertime longboard waves, but stoked to have gotten a session in. It's always great to be out there, and just wanted to say thank you for everything that you do. I've been a fan of the podcast for years, and I was thinking about that recent episode with you and Shane the whole time I was out in the water and felt compelled to get on the voicemail and just say thanks. I also wanted to let you know that I applied for an editorial job with Trends with Benefits with you and Shane and everyone there at Mudwater, and I would be so stoked to come aboard and help that vision forward, but I don't want to make this about that. I just wanted to say thanks. Whether I get a chance to meet you guys and work with you in the future or not, I just wanted to let you know how stoked I am that you guys exist and that you're doing what you're doing and that mud is a thing. I love it more than I love coffee, which I didn't think was possible. So anyways, thanks. Hope we get a chance to share a mug of mud someday and maybe some waves. But if not, keep doing what you're doing and pass some of this gratitude along to Shane as well. You guys are awesome. Thanks.
Hey, Justin from Ventura County. Thanks for sending that in. Bad news first. We already hired someone, but that was the most inventive form of putting a resume through. So points for originality. Good news is we are growing quickly, so there may be opportunities on the horizon, in which case, look out for them. Also stoked you enjoyed the podcast with Shane. Been getting some good feedback about that. I am coming to you all from Los Angeles, California, where I have been working full-time at Mudwater as their head of editorial for what's really my first full-time job, to be honest. I've always been doing my own thing in one capacity or another, and starting a new job is very much like starting a relationship, I'm learning. It's a great relationship, and I love putting myself into it. I'm also noticing when I'm giving too much of myself to it, when I need to step back, have some me time. And I'm also recognizing the importance of this podcast, which has been, I often say, the best decision I ever made in life, starting this podcast. It's a vehicle for me to maintain curiosity, which is an antidote to so much suffering in my life. I find that when I can get curious, when I can be less inward, when I can move outside of myself and interview someone, or even just talk to all of you for an intro, I'm less self-consumed and life becomes so much more enjoyable. And the fact that I own this thing, that this is the Kyle Tierman Show and no one can take it away from me and I can keep doing it as long as I like, even if no one wants to listen anymore, is really great. And it's showing me how important having that ownership over a piece of my art, it sounds pretentious, but it's a form, it's an art, podcasting, it's a craft, is to me. So thank you to everyone who listens to this podcast. Not only is this a professional endeavor for me, but it is also a form of medicine, really. So I'll keep doing it until the cows come home. If anyone else wants to send a voice memo in, I love getting them from you. You can send them to info@kyle.surf. Kyle.surf is also where you can sign up for my newsletter. I write short essays, things I see in the world, things I notice. I wrote one that got some good feedback about the homelessness in Venice, which is apocalyptic, and noticing how I don't want to become inured to it. I like being shocked. And I don't ever want to feel like it's normal. So that was a story I wrote. You can check out on my website, kyle.surf. And kyle.surf is where you can check out all my shit. And you get the voice memos, info@kyle.surf. couple things that I've been excited about recently. Fucking waking up early. Tell you that. Sometimes you sleep in and then you're groggy for the rest of the day. What is that? What is that all about? People are like, oh, I'm sleeping more hours, so I'm living longer. I have more energy. No, that fucking doesn't work for me. Like, I need to wake up at 7 if I want to be energized. And I'll tell you what helps keep me more energized. Ha ha, you didn't even know this was an ad. RPM Training's jump ropes. I use them just about every morning. I go outside, I stare at the sun, I growl at it, and I do a few sets of jump ropes, and it wakes me the fuck up. RPM Training makes functional fitness gear based in Los Gatos, California. They make fitness gear to support a healthy, active lifestyle. So if you want to stay shredded for your whole life, go to RPM Training. Check out not just their jump ropes, but their whole workout kits. Like, they will fucking set you up so that you can have a home gym that's highly functional. And the jump ropes, I gotta say, are just the best. It's such a good way to toggle into a different mood. It's impossible, if you're in a bad mood, to be like, I'm gonna think my way out of this. That doesn't happen. You need to move your body. And RPM Training's jump ropes help you do it. And then when your calves are sore and steely and staring at lesser calves from down the street, making them quiver like frightened little chihuahuas, you can go to Santa Cruz Medicinals and rub some CBD on your calves, your back neck muscles. Any muscles that are sore, CBD helps, and Santa Cruz Medicinals makes potent, high-quality CBD. They've been with this podcast for years, everyone. By supporting them, you're supporting this podcast. So go to scmedicinals.com, type in the code name KYLE10, and get 10% off. Also at RPM Training, you can type in the code name KYLE10 at checkout, get 10% off, save a few bucks, show them that by supporting this podcast, they are getting their money's worth, because it really does help incentivize me to keep these things coming at you every single week. Like I said, I love it. It's medicine. It's also a lot of work. So by getting Santa Cruz Medicinals products, RPM Training's products, you can support this podcast. All right. This episode of the podcast is with Jesse Horton and Leanne Horton. They are two of my friends from the North Shore of Oahu. We recorded this late in the evening. I stayed at their house for a few nights. Jesse and Leanne are the most badass couple I know. Jesse Horton he's been on this podcast before with his brother Ben, who is a Nat Geo explorer and photographer. It just gives you the sense of kind of the frequency with which all these people live their lives. It's aggressive, and I like it. Jesse is a talented sculptor raised in Bermuda and Colorado. He now spends time with his wife between Hawaii and Colorado. Having also worked as a submarine pilot, sailboat captain, bow hunting guide, builder, and filmmaker, he's had the opportunity to bring all of this life experience into his art. Badass bow hunter. He goes out every year and guides for months on end in Colorado. Sharp dude. Love hanging with him. And Leanne is an ex-collegiate swimmer and former 5-time Molokai prone paddleboard competitor. So for those of you who don't know, Molokai to Oahu is I think it's 32 miles. I think I got that right. It's a 32-mile open ocean paddle. This is the one that Jamie Mitchell, former podcast guest, has won 10 times. It is about as hardcore as it gets, and Leanne has competed in this 5 times. She's represented Team Hawaii 3 years in a row for the ISA World Paddleboard Championships and was the first to medal for Team Hawaii in Mexico in 2015. Paddler turned sailor, she and Jesse have sailed their boat from Mexico to French Polynesia. So, couple goals right there. Sailing around the globe. Please welcome to this podcast, my friends, Jesse and Leanne Horton.
As a team, we would sit down and basically meditate, but be led through it by our coach or someone who would come in and say, imagine you're on this beach, or imagine, you know, take you through a visual experience when you're relaxed and your eyes are closed. And then they would, you know, for the sake of the sport, say, imagine that you're starting your race and that you're stepping up on the starting blocks. And each, you know, I would imagine the race that I was doing, and so would my neighbor and their neighbor. And as we stepped up, and in our imagination, the coach would say, okay, now ready, set, go. And you would imagine every single moment of your race, from the time that your fingertips and your feet leave the block to the very first stroke that you take, to when it is you take a breath, and what you see in the crowd, and then what happens when you get to the wall to do a flip turn, all the way back to the very end. And they want you to imagine it in real time, so that when you touch the wall, you tell them when you're done, and it's supposed to be the time of your goal time.
Wow.
That you do. And you,
that's so cool.
You could eventually get it down to like the 10th of a second if you kept practicing that visualization technique. And then of course, we would write down what our goals were for that season. And it's just powerful.
The mind is so powerful. Yeah. It's so powerful. Yeah, visualization is a really good one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and picturing it going well, that's been one of the biggest lessons for me, like in life, really, is I thought for a long time that you needed a kind of self-loathing to be motivated or successful, but it just creates burnout after a certain amount of time. And the people that stick with it and are successful, like, they really understand the power of positive visualization.
Yeah, we're so good at sabotaging ourselves with our own thought, aren't we?
It's very, you think we make a concerted effort of it.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Well, I want to start by asking you guys about your sailing trip. How did that come to be? Give me a little background on it.
The actual beginning, I don't think we sat down and said, hey, do you want to sail? I mean, it had been, I know, a dream of mine to get back on the water. And then a good buddy of mine called up one day and asked if we would help him. His crew, he was buying a boat and he wanted to get it from the East Coast, I think in Florida somewhere, down through the Panama Canal and back up to Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. I was like, yeah, that'd be awesome. You know, Leanne at the time had never done a long passage like that. And, you know, good buddy, great trip. Like, you know, just thought, oh, this would be great. And then I called him back. And I said, hey, by the way, how much are you, because he had a boat at the time, small boat that he had for a number of years. It's like, hey, how much are you selling Valkyrie for? And he gave me a price.
The name of the boat is Valkyrie.
Yeah. He said, well, this is what I'm selling it for. And he paused. But if you guys want it, I'll give it to you for this. And it was a price that was just insane. You know, I mean, it basically was giving us the boat. And I called Leanne up, and at the time we weren't even engaged. You know, we were obviously very serious, but she said yes. And we figured out how to, I mean, that was where the boat started. There's right. A lot more story after that, but yeah, that was the beginning. My buddy Corey, and who's a legend in his own right, but
it's a radical thing to do with a partner. I remember my dad always said, he's like, never marry someone unless you go on a really big trip with them first. There's kind of bonding through suffering that is.
Well, we got married first.
You got married first. Yeah.
Then we went on a big
then
trip.
Then you went on a big ship together.
Fortunately, it turned out okay.
I was at your wedding. I remember
that's
that.
Right.
So it turned out okay. What was. So take me into that world when you guys set sail. What was the voyage? What was the goal?
Our goal, you know, because of Jesse's time that he had spent voyaging, our goal was to cross the Pacific. The boat, when we purchased it, was in Mexico, where Corey had it. And so we had done a couple of trips down there together to do some shakedown cruises and get it ready for an open ocean passage and essentially cross. And that took some time and some getting used to. In fact, before we fully pulled the trigger on purchasing the boat, I remember we went down there to test it out, to do our own personal shakedown cruise. And it was in Puerto Vallarta. And Corey said, just go take her out, enjoy it, and see what you see. And we went out to a couple of islands, stayed overnight, sailed around together. It was so dreamy. And we were coming back into the harbor after our overnight passage, and you remember this?
Yeah.
They were dredging something. We could see machinery on either side of the inlet, and as we were coming in, I'm somewhere up on the bow, Jesse's driving, and we're like, okay, shoot the center. They're doing some work, but it's, you know, deep in the center. And all of a sudden, we're going along, and just put, put, dunk. And we just completely come to a stop. I fly forward, nearly drop my drink that I'm holding, and we're just on this sandbar. And
Oh, shit. We
don't even own the boat yet. We're like, oh my God. And it's in Puerto Vallarta, right? So there's tourist boats coming in and out of the harbor, and we're blocking just enough. And now these other boats have to come and help pull us off the sandbar, that a boat full of tourists, like 20 people in their little red life jackets and eyes just like wide and staring right at us, are like, what's happening? Why can't we get out of the inlet? And we finally get pulled off the boat and go into the harbor. And even after all that, we're like, we'll take it.
We had to buy it then.
Yeah.
You guys strike me as being able to make it through like difficult situations together pretty easily. I remember you, Jesse, telling me a while back, like, about, you're like, if you see another boat owner, you just know that, like, they've been through some shit, and they're the kind of person who can figure stuff out, because when you're on a boat, you just need to figure it out. There's no other option.
Exactly. Tells you a lot about somebody that repeatedly puts themselves in those situations voluntarily.
Oh, you're masochist, too.
Yeah. Oh.
So you guys got the boat, and then sailed off. I want to hear what this was really like. I've never really been on a big sailing adventure.
The boat had been, you know, coastal, prepared for coastal cruising, and that's kind of what it spent its life doing. It came down from San Diego originally, and, you know, so there was some upgrades that needed to happen because we wanted to cross the Pacific in it. And it wasn't the dream boat for that type of trip. Like, if you were going to, on paper, say this is the boat you need, this is not it, but it was the dream trip, and it's a good boat. You know, we made a bunch of upgrades and made sure the rigging, everything about it, we just kind of went through. And like all things boat related, it takes more time and money than you thought. But
BOAT,
yeah,
bring out another thousand.
Exactly. Yeah. We made a lot of friends in the boatyard and drank lots of tequila in Mexico, and it's all
almost
part
got
of it.
Yeah,
it's all,
there's the whole boating culture
yes.
that you get into, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a whole thing. In Santa Cruz, there's like the Santa Cruz harbor mouth there, and people will live full time on their boats. And people are always like, oh man, the Santa Cruz surfer locals are so hardcore. I was like, not really compared to the boating community.
Yeah.
Like, those guys are way more salty.
That is the truth.
It's such a different. It's just such a different, I don't know, lifestyle, right? Like the life really being on the water. You know, they say like, "Oh, your life on the water as a surfer." You're like, "Yeah, I'm out there for a couple days, or a couple hours," but to really be spending your life out in the ocean is just such a different tempo that I've not experienced.
Yeah, and what you see is normally what you see on the docks and the people that you interact with there. But when you're out on a big voyage, it's like stepping into a portal into a different world. You just, because you're out there in a wilderness, just you and your boat and your partner, if you're with your partner, and then it's like a strange feeling coming to the end of a voyage and arriving somewhere and then just kind of picking back up with life. You know, someone says hello, like you've been there the whole time, or you're walking and you go into a store and you're like, oh my gosh, I can really just purchase this right now and I'm not stuck in the middle of the ocean. And so it's like a gateway of reality versus the open ocean reality. That's a whole different world.
That's fascinating. Yeah, it's like that scene in Castaway at the very end where he's like sitting on the plane and there's the little cup of ice that he has. Wow. And then there's this scene where he's at the party and everyone's welcoming him back and they have raw seafood for him as a delicacy.
Yeah. I mean,
that's it. It's exactly it.
When you come back from a long voyage and you are suddenly around people, you know, that movie really tried to capture that well. I think you can't explain all the things that you've just gone through, all the emotions and the things you've seen, and you just can't, you know, you can't understand what that's like unless you've been out in the middle of the ocean and experienced that.
What are the feelings that come up when you're out in the middle of the ocean?
I think first, it's not as scary. Like, a lot of people always ask me that.
Yeah, that's usually like the first question.
But it's always seems for most people to have a fear-based tinge to that question. And I've never felt fearful. It's just different. You know, you have to be confident. You know, I'd probably be afraid if I was on a boat that I thought was about to sink or... you know, you should be confident in your vessel and your crew and all those things. But being out there it's incredible, I think, because it's kind of like mountaineering or something where it's you and the planet. And again, you've got to deal with whatever comes up. So there's elements of confidence, of putting yourself to the test. You know, you go deep into who you are and why you are. And I mean, what it feels like to be out there is just a whole mix and range of emotions. Like, the highs are so high. Some of the most incredible sunrises and sunsets and night skies.
I'm and sure the night the lows skies.
Are right there with them, you know, like the lows. It's like sometimes you do not want to be there, you know, and it might be because there's no wind and you're just hot and you're just sitting there. You know, like you're bored as you've ever been in your life.
Yeah. What do you do to pass the time on a windless day?
We played a lot of cards, Jesse and I, and got really good at the two games that we knew. Gin Rummy, and what was the other one? Rummy.
Gin Rummy and Rummy.
There was a lot of time out on the deck. I like to chase the shade around the boat throughout the day because I didn't want to wear any sunscreen and I wanted to be naked most of the time. And it's just nice to move around the boat because there's not much moving around other than going from the deck back to the cockpit or down to the galley or trying to cook something. There, you had to be very proactive about not being bored. You could very easily kind of slump into a downward spiral of just sitting there.
Yeah.
And staring off into nothing. But there's always something to do, though. That's the thing, is it's like you never could really be bored. Things were breaking on the boat that we had to fix. We had to eat, and eating wasn't just a quick process. It was always a really long process of maybe if we caught a fish, we had to prep it or whatever else. But one of the more exciting events that happened out there was our on the mainsail, the at the top of the mast, one of the things broke. What was it?
I think one of the halyards.
Yeah. But it was because of something that was on the mast that just needed to be fixed once and for all. So somebody had to go up to the top of the mast in the middle of the ocean to fix whatever it was that was cutting the halyard constantly, because it was the second time it had broken. And fortunately, it was pretty calm, or at least we had to wait till it was, because going, you know, when you're on a boat and it's rocking right there. But now you extend a mast or a pole 20 feet up in the air, and it's like,
it's really the rocking.
Centrifugal force. Yeah, it's way more rocking up there. And if you have a human like Jesse swinging from a rope that's dangling from the top of the mast, he could be going way back and forth, swinging left and right, and potentially hit the mast, and it can be super dangerous. So, of course, I'm, you know, down there with, he's got his climbing knot set up and he's belaying himself up there, but I'm kind of running safety and holding the bucket of tools down below. And of course I have the camera to try and document it as much as possible. And I think at one point I'm holding the camera and his bucket is swinging and he looks down and he's like, Leanne, the bucket and the camera. And I was like, okay. I put the camera down and just, he had to go up and fix the thing on the mast and came back down and off we went again. And you're just like, okay, keep going.
A little closer.
Yeah.
After it.
Yeah.
Yep. Did you guys feel like the trip bonded you?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah? Like, new relationship once it was done? Or just different?
I don't think it was like a, once we arrived, we had transformed into a new relationship. I think it was
That was our honeymoon.
That was our honeymoon.
That's a side point of all this. Okay. Like, that was literally our honeymoon. And it was probably like 3 years of a normal marriage packed into a month.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exciting. So why aren't you like wearing sunscreen, Leanne?
Because showers were not readily available and I just didn't like washing them off. I have lots of sunscreen that I really adore. I love my Avosol.
Avosol's great.
It's great.
Avosol is the best sunscreen.
It is.
I've.
It's the most functional and the best for the planet.
Yep.
By and large.
Yep. Free ad for Avosol.
Yay.
I have searched far and wide for the best sunscreen, and I consistently come back to and consistently ask people, and they say Avosol is the best.
Yeah. So no offense to that, but you still have to wash it off, and I just wasn't taking showers. I think I took one shower every 2 or 3 days. And fortunately, we had a water maker on the boat, so I didn't really have to think about the water.
Is that something that turns salt water into fresh water?
Yes, nice. Exactly.
Okay.
And that was a highlight for me, was taking a shower. And so, I just didn't want to put anything on my skin that I didn't have to, so I could stay clean and chase the shade around the boat.
That is such a radical experience.
Yeah.
Good for you guys for doing that.
Thank you.
So you have, Leanne, have always been an ocean person growing up in Florida?
Always, yes. My mother and my father were ocean people. That's where actually my interest in sailing started, was this one photo that my mom and my dad had on the mantle of our house of them in their younger years when they had first met. My dad was a second mate on a Windjammer cruise ship that sailed around the Caribbean and Bermuda. And my mom was on a trip with some of her friends, and that's where she met my dad. And so they have this photo, the two of them in the stern of a boat. He's looking handsome and bronzed with his hair blowing in the wind, and she's looking romantic-eyed over at him with this big smile on her face. And I just kind of always had this romantic notion of sailing in my head. And so we grew up in Florida, not with sailboats, but on boats. And my brothers are fishermen, and I was in junior lifeguards, and we were just always on the boat or at the beach. So the ocean is always very much a part of my life. Yeah.
And when did you move to the North Shore?
After college.
Yeah.
I had visited because my older brother came to school here at UH and fell in love with it. But I moved here personally after I graduated college.
All right. And when did you go from there to paddleboarding and getting into the Molokai stage of your life?
That was an organic transition, actually, from the ocean going and the swimming background that I had.
Sure.
One of my great girlfriends, Morgan is her name, and it's all her fault. I always tell her that it's all her fault. She swam with my older brother, and when I moved here, we became fast friends because she was also a swimmer and just really into ocean athletics and has already established herself in stand-up paddleboarding herself here. And so she got me into stand-up paddleboarding, and I found out I wasn't that good at it.
It's hard.
It is super hard.
Paddleboarding's hard.
We did this one casual race where I was last place, but before we finished, like, two people passed me. One was a pregnant woman and one was like an 8-year-old boy, and then me. And I just was like, I don't think this is for me.
Right. So you were on one of the stand-up paddle boards that are the ocean racing ones.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. With the paddle standing up. And I just didn't like standing up for that long.
No.
And so she's like, you might want to try prone paddleboarding. Take this board. And they're much thinner, and you know, it's a prone paddle board, so you're laying down, and it just clicked because that's swimming, that's surfing, that's everything that is already. And I did one race and was just hooked from there, and didn't plan to make it a thing in my life. It just became a hobby while I was in graduate school. And she suggested, why don't you try this race, Molokai to Oahu. It's from one island to another island. I was like, whoa, that sounds cool. So I trained for it with my partner at that time, and we did it as a relay the very first year, and then I was hooked. And the next year I did it solo, and again solo, and again solo, and then as a relay again. And I did 5 years of it, and it just was a huge part of my life and such a huge community of watermen and waterwomen that are bonded by this sport and this channel, the Ka'iwi channel, that it's a powerful thing.
Seems like it. Yeah. So everyone does it on the same day and everyone leaves at the same time?
Yes on the same day, they have like half hour staggered times between the stand-up paddleboarders and the prone paddleboarders. And now, of course, there's foiling. And so now the foilers are going as well.
The foil stand-up paddleboards, or they just foil across?
They have foil stand-up paddleboards.
And wow.
Only a number of people in the last 2 years have done the whole channel on a foil stand-up paddleboard. Kai Lenny being one of them, and it's very fast.
Yeah, you go way faster on foils, faster, right?
Yeah.
I'm sure. And then what's the second fastest, prone or stand-up paddleboard?
Stand-up, typically.
Stand-up is faster than
prone.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Wow. Yeah.
What were the times? I think the foil, Kai did it in like two hours or something?
It was ridiculously fast.
Yeah, like.
Did Kai win has he won the stand-up paddleboard one as well?
Yes.
Right? He has.
Yes.
He's really good at that stuff, right?
Yes. We love you, Kai.
What a dude. What a dude. I saw an Instagram of him like doing some crazy shit on a snowboard recently. And I was like, what a dude. That's all I was like, what a dude.
Absolutely. Dude, that sums it up.
What a dude. Yeah. I like Kai.
Yeah, he's awesome. We got to go to Fiji together as part of Team Hawaii for the ISA World Paddleboard Championships when that was happening a number of years back. Yeah,
and no way.
Fortunate to be on part of Team Hawaii with some other amazing athletes. And it's stand-up paddleboard racing, prone paddleboard racing, and SUP surfing. So
whoa.
Cloud Break was the SUP surfing spot, and all the races took place in between Cloud Break and the islands. And there's a distance race, a sprint race, and a relay. And the relay was myself, Annie Reichert of Maui, Hunter Pfluger from here, Oahu, and Kai Lenny as well. Where there were me and Hunter were the prone paddle boarders, and Annie and Kai were the stand up paddle boarders. And we, it's international, you know, there's France, New Zealand, Australia, those, you know, are some of the tops, but there's from countries all over, and we're all there in this relay race. And the prone paddle boarders go first, and we're doing solid. We're in second or third, I can't remember exactly where, and we're doing great. We're super stoked and proud of ourselves. Kai is the anchor leg, jumps on his stand-up paddleboard and kicks it into a different gear, like something that I've never seen before. Just this like determination seeping from his pores and like coming out of his eyes and shining through everything, and just is starting to reel in the people in front of him. And it's just the most incredible thing to watch. We're all cheering so loud, thinking there's no way. Wow, he's in second now. Oh my gosh, is he going to pass the first place guy? There's no way. There's only 5 meters left. And somehow it just was down to like neck and neck, and he pulls it off and he wins the race.
No
for us. And
yeah, way.
It was fully one of those moments where we're like lifting him up. We all come together as Team Hawaii, or like high-fiving, congratulating the other teams. Obviously just like, how did Kai pull it off? But he's got that next level athleticism that can do something like that. And it's super fun to watch.
Yeah. He has really crazy stamina.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to like get some scientists to hook him up to some shit and see what's going on. Cause even with big wave surfing, like he'll outlast everyone in a session.
Yeah.
He'll just go surf big waves for like 10 hours straight.
Incredible.
Wild. Yes. Prone. I've always felt like swimmers can translate their skill to surfing better than vice versa.
Yeah, absolutely. Then surfers and paddlers,
yeah,
to swimming.
Yeah, like I know, like growing up surfing, not really being a swimmer, I've learned how to ocean swim over the last number of years, and like I'm proficient at it, but still have never really felt like the fact that I've been surfing since I was 10 years old, like helped me a lot in my swimming stroke. It still is a fairly awkward transition.
Well, how much are you like trying to go swim? That's the thing, is it's not quite as fun,
right,
as surfing.
Yeah, I mean, that's every time I'm with Leanne and we're around other swimmers, you know, like our mutual friend, Jamie, you know, to hear all of them talk about the early mornings in high school, like when kids were being kids, and the dedication that swimmers and a couple other sports have to getting up and training and doing all the regular stuff that kids have to do and then doing it again the next morning.
Yeah.
I mean, that the technique that you all built up from an early age, that on top of any talent you might have had, just,
a whole nother thing.
Yeah,
that's I remember talking to some swimmers in high school, and I remember talking to one in particular who was really good, and he's like, yeah, I don't like it, it's not fun. Like, so it's like you're looking at the bottom of a pool for hours and hours a day.
Right.
I'm really good at it, but what you guys do surfing is, that's what's fun.
Yeah,
but it's a skill that you build up, man. I mean, I think that one problem for surfers is that it is so fun that we have a hard time transitioning into less fun stuff, which is most of life.
100%.
Right?
Yeah.
We like expect it all to be a blast. We're like, wait, what? No. Job? Bullshit.
Waves are firing
right now. Yeah.
That's true.
Well, that's so cool that you found that community out here on with prone paddleboarding. It seems like you're kind of bonded through suffering in a way. And it's something that I've always been interested to get into, but have just, I'm like, oh, more paddling. It's like my least favorite part of surfing.
It's true, but it does really help your surfing, even if you're already very good at it. It just is, it has a way of really improving everything about your surfing, your stamina, your stroke, getting into waves earlier, whatever it is.
So when you started doing that, were you like, oh, I can do this. I'm good. Did you get that initial like feedback right when you started prone?
Yeah. Probably? Fortunately I did, but I wasn't that good. You know, I was fortunate enough to meet some people in the community who saw that I was interested in it and took me under their wing to teach me more. Yeah. And the first race I did with Morgan actually was the 4th of July Tahui race up here from Sunset to Waimea. And I didn't know anyone and I didn't know anything. And I remember finishing and some of the friends I had made said, oh, whoa, Leanne just beat George Ramos, who is... He's passed away a number of years ago of cancer, but George is and became a great friend of mine. He's just was a super athlete. If he wasn't out paddleboarding, he was mountain biking or running or swimming or surfing and just charging the whole time. And so that group of paddlers allowed me to join their training groups. And from then, people like Greg Quinn, Mike Cote, these guys would just teach me how to ride bumps and how to connect smaller bumps into bigger bumps and essentially ride the ocean and paddle less. The goal for paddleboarding isn't to paddle. It's to just catch wave after wave, bump after bump, so that you're really just flying down the ocean. It's so fun.
That's so cool. And you can do that on Molokai as well if the wind is good.
Yes, if conditions are right, it is good. You can have pretty much a downwind ride the whole time, and it's a blast.
So fun. What piece of advice would you give someone if they were thinking about doing Molokai?
Oh, man, a piece of advice. I think believe in yourself. Yeah, I mean, that's probably where there's obvious amounts of preparation and technical aspects of getting your diet dialed in and the preparation. But I think for so many people, their barrier is their own mind. Just like we were talking about, just visualizing a positive outcome and that you can do it and then just go do it.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so wild. I don't know if I'm going to get into prone paddleboarding in this lifetime. There's too many fun things to do and not enough time.
Well, once we discovered the wind can take you, it was much nicer to sail than to paddleboard.
Right. Yeah. And you, where did you grow up again, Jesse?
Bermuda,
right.
And then Colorado when I was a little older.
Colorado when you were older. And when did you get into hunting?
You know, I grew up spearfishing.
Right.
And I feel like that's where it started.
Sure.
But the actual, like, bow hunting and mountain side of it, I think, was later. I don't even know when exactly. Yeah. I always shot a bow when I was a kid. Like, my grandparents all... we're into archery.
Yeah.
So I mean, I've got photos of being like 3 years old holding a bow. So
you've been into it for a while.
Yeah. Yeah.
And remind me again, how'd you guys meet?
How did we meet, Jesse?
FarmerPaddleboarders.com or something.
Yeah. No. There's this dating app.
Hunter/paddleboarders date.com.
No,
it's got to be that level of specificity.
The short version was my brother was actually working on a surf film that a mutual friend of mine had put Ben in touch with some girls that happened to live in Hawaii.
This is your brother.
And Ben came out and he came
to the hen house.
Yeah. Leanne lived at the hen house.
That's how it
with,
happened.
Yep.
And then I was supposed to come, and I had another job. I ended up going to the Cook Islands to look for whales instead of coming to Hawaii to look for surfer girls. But we actually ended up meeting in Colorado. just a few weeks after that. Because Leanne was in Colorado for something and my brother found out and was like, hey, you gotta go meet my family. And so we owe my brother some introductions there.
Yeah.
It's cool that you guys have such an outdoor focused life. Like, I remember I met you randomly years ago, I think in like 2013, when I was out here doing my documentary on like the GMO protests that were happening, and you let me crash on the floor.
Yeah, I was still working at Patagonia.
Yeah, you were
still
working at Patagonia. That was how I got introduced. And I remember just thinking like, wow, the gals at this house are so outdoorsy. Like, they just love the ocean so much. And like every day you guys were going out on crazy adventures. And I was thinking like, man, the dial of like what is normal for you in an outdoor life is so much higher than most people. I really like these gals.
Yeah, we were lucky.
And then you like meet Jesse and you're like, oh, he's like one of the few people that can match you like for like a life in the outdoors. It's such a high priority for both of you. You know, it's cool that's you guys are on that same level.
Thank you. Yeah.
Yeah, we've been able to speak for myself. I've been very fortunate in life to have that opportunity, you know, and to get to meet Leanne. Like when we met, it was just kind of, I mean, we met and we went snowboarding, and for me it was just game on. It was like, wow, this girl, she's awesome. And you know, then I came and visited her here, and to see what her world was like out here, and her friends and her community and everything. It's, you know, Leanne was somebody that I immediately was just attracted to and wanted to zero in on.
Thank goodness.
And then, Jess, you're out for a few months a year now as a Colorado elk guide.
Yeah, so in September, that's when archery season is in Colorado.
Yeah, and have you come out to visit him when he's doing that?
I have. I'll typically come for a portion of it, but you know, once he's up in the mountains, it's almost like he's out in the middle of the ocean, and it's there's not much point in me being there. But I mean, I enjoy it. I love going, and the times that I have gone, and he's not working, he will bring me, and so we've hunted together a few times and have had some pretty cool experiences. I mean, on my very first time, I followed him in a, you know, it's a hike with intention, and it's a really special experience. Yeah,
hiking with weapons
hashtag. And we sat up on this pond and just waited for hours and watched the sun go down and waited for animals to come in, and didn't see an elk that time. But as we were getting up to hike out, this little bear rambles in, and I'm weaponless. You know, I just was like, I'm just going to hike and follow you. And that was my first time seeing a bear that close. And I was like, give me a knife or something. He's like, what are you going to do with that? I was like, I don't know. I just give me something. And we're just staring. We scared the bear as much as it scared us. And so, you know, that was a really cool learning experience for me to be part of the wilderness and to see Jesse's connection. He's so on it in the woods, and he knows the areas that he knows just like the back of his hands, and has names for them and understands the habits of the animals. And it's a really special connection.
Yeah. I've been really drawn to it for that kind of same reason. Like, I've spent so much time looking at the ocean.
Yeah.
Like, I've become pretty proficient at reading waves and the water and being able to see things that maybe someone who hasn't spent that same kind of time can see. You know, like, you see little nuances. It's like all of a sudden, it's like one of those paintings that you're looking at, and the longer you stare, it becomes something else. Yeah. And I realized that it's the same in the mountains. Like, it's the exact same. The more time you spend out in the mountains, the more you see, the more you hear. And it's such a great skill set to acquire. I was thinking that like out this last summer when I was out on my trip through Colorado meeting some of these really cool people who spend a lot of time out in the wilderness there. I was just like, oh, if I was born here, I would be you for sure. And you would be me if you were born on the coast. It's the same personality type.
Absolutely.
You're really fascinated by the natural world.
Yeah.
And you just want to learn as much about it as possible.
The curiosity. Yeah, no,
it's very much that way. And I think it's the crossover between these two environments. You're really just carrying over a lot of the same skill sets. And I feel like it's been such a privilege for me to be able to spend as much time as I have in both places. You know, I have friends in Colorado that have always just been mountain people, and they're just hardcore cowboys, and they know the mountains so well. But, you know, I would love to bring them to the ocean and yeah. show them, you know, take them underwater. But, you know, to be able to see both. And I think we were talking before a little bit about, as you develop skills in life and you develop your own personal processes of how you get good at things, which is different for everyone, like it translates to both sides. You know, you get, when you focus on learning how to track an animal, well, you can do the same in the water.
Right.
You know, you learn how to observe, and I don't know, it's, There's so much crossover. It's really fun.
It really is. Yeah. There's a different kind of immensity with the mountains. Like there's something I would say that one of the things that you begin to notice more, right, as you spend more time in the mountains are where the water's coming from and where it's going and how that is constantly directing ecosystems. I think that's one thing, like when you start hunting, that you're not really thinking about, like, you know, you're just like, oh, where are the animals? And then you're like, oh, well, animals need water, you know, they need shade. Like they're kind of, no, it's not too different than like you guys on a boat. Like, oh, I was just following the shade around and every few days we got fresh water. Like,
that's a good point.
Right?
We're all animals.
No, we're all animals.
Those cycles. I mean, the ocean, it's easy to use the illustration of the tides.
Right.
You know, it's a very obvious, predictable, repeatable event. And in the mountains, you kind of have the same things. You know, the animals move up and down the mountain. And then you got seasonal things. And, you know, it's all tied in.
Yeah.
I sailed one time from Japan to Hawaii, and there was this massive typhoon that we had to wait. It went right by Japan and we had to wait for it before we could leave. And that typhoon, I remember, ended up just kind of encompassing the whole Northern Pacific and then affecting the weather in North America and then causing fires in California. And it had Colorado ended up having one of its worst fire seasons ever. I think this was back in 2012. But just to see that connection, you know, I mean, right. Here I was in Japan, and I'm hearing about fires shortly thereafter in Colorado from the same weather patterns. You know, it's just the level of connectedness was really cool to
so wild
comprehend.
And what was this last season like guiding in Colorado? Give me some stories.
Oh man.
Cause it was my first year going on an elk hunt, and I'm still full kook hunter, big time. And going out into Montana and looking for elk was a whole new level of kookiness. Cause I don't know how to call elk. And I was with some really good, hunters. Shout out to Dylan Snyder. I was learning a lot, but there was just an immensity to it that I was not used to. A lot different than, you know, hunting pigs in California or Hawaii.
Yeah. this year was actually a really, I would say, good season for our area. There was a lot of elk around. It was a very dry season. I mean, again, fires and things. So it kind of pushes the elk into different areas. But they were super vocal. So lots of practice calling. And right around the rut, there's a couple days that you're not really sure which days they're going to be exactly when the elk go into the full rut, you know, for the mating season. But there was 3 days this year that were just phenomenal. I mean, it's like the forest was just erupting with, you know, anybody that may be listening to this or may not. If you've never heard a elk bugle, like, go Google it. It's something primal, you know. It sounds like a dinosaur in the woods if you've never heard it before. And so getting, you know, we regularly get up to within 20, 30 yards of these elk, and they're just screaming. And it's so cool.
And this was for about 3 days when they were in the rut?
Yeah, the entire month of September and beyond, you know, they're bugling and calling. Elk are very vocal animals, and they make a lot of noise in the woods. But they could, you know, if they know you're there, then they just disappear.
Right.
They're very wary. Their senses are all very, very good. But yeah, this time of year when they're in the rut, they're communicating back and forth across the mountain. And, you know, I've been able to show her this up close and personal with a couple elk where you call them in and they're just, you know, an elk screaming at 20 yards is really just a phenomenal experience.
Yeah, you got to see that?
Yeah, we hear it.
Hear it.
We couldn't see through the brush this particular time that I was there, but you could hear them calling back and forth. And it's just, I mean, I think I heard it and I looked at Jesse with my eyes super big, like, whoa, it's an incredible sound. And you're just so close to this massive animal. It's really cool.
Yeah. It's so radical.
Did you hear it?
We did get a couple calls back, but we didn't get into anything insane, but I did get to see some, like, I got to experience a little bit of it. So like, we did get some calls back, and then, you know, was able to see some of the rub on the trees and like just kind of get a better sense for how really proficient hunters move through the woods and when to stop and when to move. Like, it's just a whole, it's an art to it. That is so sensitive. You know?
No, and that's exactly what I love about it. It's not that you're walking through the woods with a weapon with this intent to bring something home. That's, you know, what gets you out there. It's being in the woods and feeling like you're part of something bigger than yourself, and that it, you know, you're listening, you're smelling. You're just being still. I mean, when it's really hard to sit still. I can't tell you how many people I take out that cannot sit still. And they'll tell you, like, oh, I don't like to sit.
Right.
You know, I want to just go chase the elk. And I was like, well, you're not going to see any elk then.
Right.
You know, at some point you have to sit still and just listen.
Right.
For long periods of time.
Yeah, just to see what's going on in the woods.
Yeah.
You know,
it's an authentic connection. That's what's so special about it, about kind of all these experiences that we're talking about, is just this natural, authentic connection with nature, with another being, human or animal. And that's the experience.
Well said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so easy to forget that you're human and that you're on a planet suspended in vast vacuum space.
Totally.
And the way to live it is just to go out into the planet and be like, wow, crazy.
Yeah.
I'm going to try and notice as much as possible about this.
Mushrooms or no mushrooms?
Mushrooms can remind you of that. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that – Without mushrooms, you need to work through the boredom, right?
Sure.
And you need to sit long term in like out on the middle of the ocean, out in nature. Like we continuously come back to boredom, but one of my favorite quotes is by Sam Harris, and he says, boredom is just an inability to pay attention.
That's good.
That's great.
Isn't that good?
That was really good.
Right? So if you can pay attention, if you can work through the boredom to pay attention to what's happening, and you don't need to be stimulated with little dopamine hits every second,
right?
You can go deeper, and those are the experiences that last.
Well, and it, you know, I don't know what your experience with hunting this year was in terms of like what you learned, but everybody learns something
for sure
every year that they didn't know the year before, no matter how hard you try and be the best hunter.
Yeah.
In this example, because every year you change, and the level of introspection that's required to be proficient at observing the world around you is, to me, phenomenal in that, you know, just to think about, because just how you pick up your feet,
right,
is different in the woods than if you're walking down a sidewalk. And so to change your behavior for a different purpose is a big part of, you know, a lesson that you can then take home with you from the woods into the rest of your life. You know, that ability to grasp, conceptualize, and practice a new skill and make a change in yourself and take that home with you. So it's growth.
Indeed it is. Well, I'm happy you guys found each other. You're both awesome humans.
It's great being
friends with both of you. Thanks for letting me crash at your house on this little adventure.
Anytime.
One of my favorite things having this podcast is like, I get to crash at friends' houses, and then I get an excuse to have a long conversation with them.
It's the best.
It's the best. It really is the best. I want to do it for the rest of my life.
I think you will.
In some capacity. You guys have been going.
We got a new rule.
What's the new rule?
I mean, you're always invited at the house. This is actually not our rule. We're borrowing it from somebody, but they said everybody's invited and you can stay at the house, but it's a one roll of toilet paper rule. Mm. You're allowed to stay as long as that roll of toilet paper.
That's really funny.
Then you gotta leave for a bit.
That's wonderful. That's really wonderful. No, because here's the thing in Hawaii, you'd be like, everyone's like, oh yeah, can I come stay at your house? And you're like, for how long? This is not our first rodeo. Because
we've seen your kind before
3 months later. The one roll of toilet paper is such a good one.
It is.
That's perfect.
Right?
That's so perfect. Yeah. Well, people are like, guests are awesome for 5 days.
Yeah.
4 days, yeah. 5 days, you know, like right in that, it's like, it's awesome. And then you start to notice, like, as the guest, the generosity just, like, recedes away slowly. Like, so what do you, then the questions will come up, like, so what's your plan? what's next?
What's going on next week? Yeah.
What's going on next week? That's a good one. Oh, that's funny. That's why I live in an RV, because I have no room for anyone. But I will pay it back one day.
Well, Kyle, you are definitely one of our full roll friends.
If I am a full roll friend, that's really funny. Yeah, someone's like sucks to live with. You're just like wasting the toilet paper.
Like my cat.
Oh, buddy, sorry.
Oh, the cat got the paper.
It's out. Well, you guys are awesome. Where can people get in touch with you if they want to follow your journeys, Leanne?
You can follow our Instagram, Valkyrie Voyage. It's Valkyrie_voyage. Yeah.
How do you spell Valkyrie?
Good question. VALKYRIE.
Valkyrie Voyage.
My my artwork is on Horton Creates.
I will
on
link
Instagram.
To it.
Yeah.
You guys are the best.
Thanks, Kyle.
Thanks.
That's our show. I'm going to play you out with a song called Flashing Lights by Sourgrass. And you can head over to my website, kyle.surf, to sign up for my newsletter. Get out in the water, whatever body of water you're closest to. I promise it will make your day better.
Shout, roam the night till the lights go out.